It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
All right, everyone, you guys ready for some podcasting?
Yeah.
I've never said that before, but I have a feeling I'm going to say it a lot in the future because it's one of the best ways to sort of digest a lot of information when things are going on in your car. You can really get into the subject.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in California, there's very few subjects that are more important to us, either in the industry or just as a consumer, than agriculture in the state. So we're really happy to have all you guys here. So to my right, we have Roger Wasson. He is the host of the Farm to Table Talk podcast.
That's right.
And he's got a website, but it's also available on iTunes and other places you get podcasts. So this very podcast will be posted later on. So if you miss something or if you want to hear your own question, because you can be part of this, you can be famous in the podcast world. Just ask a good question. It's going to make it in there, right? Is that right, Roger?
You bet. You bet. We want to welcome everybody, and we're going to get the podcast up pretty soon.
Okay, so Roger, why don't you tell everybody about yourself, your background, introduce the panel, and then we'll get going.
Well, I grew up on a farm, as a lot of people here have. I grew up on a farm in Illinois, and we didn't realize that there was such a thing as farm to fork at the time. Some of you realize the same thing. But I grew up in Illinois. We went to Illinois State University, and I worked at a radio station at first, but then I started working for farmers. And we had a farm show, and I manage councils like the Almond Board and others around the country. And I find myself in California with hanging out with people like I've got today. And I tell you, I find this so exciting. You know, we've got Michael Dimmick with Roots of Change. We have Karen Ross, and Karen is the Secretary of Agriculture. And Karen, you started in Nebraska, or you lived in Nebraska for a while, too.
I grew up in Nebraska on a farm. So, I still own that farm.
So you're like me, in that we've had in the Midwest, we had a different perspective in this.
That's why I appreciate California so much.
Well, there's another guy that appreciates California, is helping make California what it is today, is Patrick Mulvaney. And Patrick is a chef and owner of Mulvaney's here in town that really personifies farm to fork. And Patrick, you're another one of these people who came from somewhere else to California.
I came a little further away. I came from New York, right, out to the other coast.
So what were you thinking?
I was thinking that this was heaven, right? A 12-month growing season and food coming from all around, getting to know the farmers and the vintners and the brewers who are right in your neighborhoods. What a better sandbox could you have as a cook?
Yeah. Now, Karen, what were you thinking when you came to California the first time?
I asked, why did my husband bring me to California? Because I always confess, do they really have agriculture in California? I knew about beaches and state parks and redwoods and Hollywood. And think how excited I was to discover, we know how to do agriculture in California.
Oh, you sure do. And Karen, you have a unique perspective. We won't be able to talk too much about it, but you've also helped run the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
For a brief time, I was chief of staff.
Yeah, well, chief of staff is actually running it while all the politicians are out giving speeches. And all the USDA, Karen was running it, and she chose to come back here. We're glad she did.
I'm the lucky one.
Now, Michael, are you a California native?
Well, my parents were. I was born back east because my father was in school, but I was connected to agriculture because my father's sister married into a cattle ranching family in Santa Clara County. So as a kid, I spent a lot of time on a 11,000-acre cattle ranch and learned a lot about agriculture as a kid that way.
Well, and then at what point in time do you say, I'm going to be in this? I mean, you grew up and went to college.
I went to college, but I always was interested in agriculture. And I got a chance, because I spoke a language, I got hired by an international agribusiness company and was sent to Europe. And fell in love with it, and decided when I came back from Europe that I wanted to start my own thing in that area, kind of looking into what the future of agriculture was about, and that's how it happened.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you come from, you know, an experience in Europe and think about the future of agriculture, because in some ways people felt like our future was going away from the European style. In that, farm to fork, in a way, is still celebrated and never had a lapse in Europe. And I think that here in, you know, in California, I think we're getting you all plugged up here, or plugged in right now. Here we're recognizing that there is a spot for what we ended up calling California cuisine, and some are now referring to American cuisine. It's kind of, Karen, it's kind of like you when you were working at the USDA. you know, it's funny, having come from California, gone back there, and working for agriculture across America, yeah, and then knowing that something special about here in California.
Well, it is special. I mean, Patrick's already talked about the diversity of having a year-round growing season. The Mediterranean climate we have is unique to the globe. There's only five other regions that have this kind of a climate that lets us do that. But we're also special because if you look at the farming ranching community, our ethnic diversity reflects California's diversity. That brings with it new crops and things from home countries, wherever they are. And as we attract people from around the world, we're still the number one destination. I'm very mindful that Visit California is right around the corner. We're the number one tourist destination. And people come here in part because they want to eat and drink California. So we have something, it is unique, it is special, that takes nothing away from other regional cuisines, and I love and celebrate that we're doing that because it means we value food, we value coming around the table, we value building community around sharing food and having civilized discourse around whatever the issues might be.
Well, Patrick, yes, you looked at Patrick Mulvaney right then, because Patrick, that's what you do at your restaurant, is celebrate food and celebrate the connection to the land, and was that the idea from the start when you started being a chef out here in Sacramento?
So the idea that my wife, Bobbin, and I had when we first started was, that we didn't tell anybody about at first, was to create a space for people to come and break bread and have conversations about the state of our region, of our world, and to potentially invite us into those conversations. So that really, over the last 12 years, that really has happened in a magnificent way, and really proud of all the partners that we have in California that have done that by lifting the conversation about food and eating, and through that, education and workforce development and living qualities. So for me, it became food maybe is the center of my life, and so then you talk about that, the branches that come out from that, right? So by planting this farm to fork, it becomes a tree. And under that tree, there's a glorious amount of shade from all the other things that surround it.
Well, and you know, I want to follow up on what you're talking about, being a place for people to gather around the table and have conversations. Because we are here celebrating farm to pork and celebrating food. But what it enables, being around the table and enjoying that good food and appreciating it, are conversations that take place. Each of you have probably been to Patrick's restaurant many times, and there are other great restaurants in Sacramento too. And I just think, when there is a big idea like how we're going to change the water system, how we're going to improve the soil, oftentimes these restaurants here in town are playing a key role. Every night, especially it's a state capital, every night these restaurants are having conversations going on and enjoying the food.
That's totally true. I mean, Mulvaney's is our clubhouse. I mean, it's where my crew comes whenever we're in Sacramento, and we're in Sacramento quite often. And because, as you're saying, I think the most interesting conversations happen around a table, and food system is the base system of civilization. If you don't get it right there, you're going to have problems everywhere else. And California, I think, and in large part due to Karen and some of the leading farmers in the state, people are thinking about how to make agriculture a solution to so many challenges of today, and that's very heartening. And so it's really important that Sacramento has declared itself the farm-to-fork capital of the world, because it brings all those important conversations here, and we have a chance to influence the nation.
Yes. If California can't figure it out here, the world will have lost something, because what we do here is scalable and can apply appropriately in other places. I think one of the most important things, and I always caution my friends, it's about farm to every fork, because in this city we pay a lot of attention to the access issues. We find it hard to believe, in the number one agricultural state, that we still have 1 in 6 of our citizens that are food insecure. And many of them are children, senior citizens, veterans. And so we have some very innovative nonprofits right here in this city and in this region. And again, we go back to Patrick as one of the partners in St. John's Program for Real Change. Used to be the shelter for homeless women and children. And it's about learning food skills as a ladder up and out of a violent home life or whatever the disadvantages are. We have Food Literacy Center, which was started up to teach kids about fruits and vegetables and eating healthy, the nutrition aspect of that. We have Ag in the Classroom, the Center for Land-Based Learning. So it truly is. When he talks about all the branches on this tree, we have to make sure it is completely inclusive of all aspects of the food system and how we connect with each other, and putting health, nutrition of the community, of people, of the land at the center of that.
And I think it's important to talk about, too, the other thing, since we're sitting in the UC Davis Health Center tent,
yeah,
to give a shout out to the fact that they've hired Santana Diaz,
yeah,
to change,
sure,
the way that people eat food. It does two things. One, it's going to increase outcomes, health outcomes, right, which is a doctor-y kind of thing to say. From a pedestrian way, I'll say you'll eat better in the hospital. But it also, for the farmers, yes, is going to change the markets. Because with him doing 6,300 meals a day,
right,
he's changing the way people grow,
right,
deliver, and eat food,
yeah,
42,000 times a week.
Which is,
and that's through UC,
yeah,
Davis.
So good for you.
Santana.
Yeah, good for you. And I have to point out, right over here, California, for California Thursdays, that's school lunches,
right,
one day a week, that are dedicated to making sure 100% of what's served to those students is California grown. And they have gardening programs and the learning aspects of planting it, preparing it, and eating it. It's really setting those behaviors early, early in life.
Hey, Rob, I think it's time to take the microphone a little bit out of the audience,
yeah,
because there's somebody blushing out there because he's being bragged about. Hey,
You don't have to say much, but can you at least stand up? They gave you a nice shout-out there.
You get equal time. Just take the mic for a second.
Just briefly, why is this program important to you? Why did you want to get involved, and how do you feel in how it's going?
You know, it's really about our community. So just seeing the impact in the last 11 months since I've been able to join the UC Davis Health team has been very impactful to our farming community. We're talking about in the millions already within the first 11 months. And it just makes sense to have, for good food to be good medicine, right? And so reducing the processed items and for further supporting, even in the background, you got our vinegars, Sparolane out of Ceres, California. Those are the ones that, the brands that we're supporting. So all the way from vinegars to fruits and vegetables. It just makes sense. Thank you, Chef Patrick, for the introduction.
He's good at this.
You thought you could just sit here and listen in.
Somebody else important in the front row is Bobbin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Bobbin. say hello. Bobbin, you can come in. You can jump in anytime.
Gee, I haven't said anything stupid yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you. But really, that's a pretty powerhouse on that stage. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Well, you think about it, Roger, that we just talk about these few examples. Growing up in New York, we used to say there are a million stories in the naked city. And now that I live in California, I like to say that there are 8 million stories in the naked farmland. Because there are all these stories of people doing good and trying to improve our life through eating better all around the state.
Well, you know, Mark, you had a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your reaction. You know, 20 years ago, something like this may not have seemed possible, but, you know, it's noon, and there's families, there's young people, there's seniors. Everybody wants to be here, yeah, to celebrate this movement. So just as being in the industry for so long, or maybe in policy, yeah, does it make you feel anything when you look at, you, yeah, see the Capitol, you see, no, all these people that are here for, yeah, this purpose?
It's pretty cool for this, but because of the diversity of the food that we grow and all the different regions, I have to remind everyone, if there's 400 commodities in the state, there are 400 different food festivals. When you have an artichoke festival, a garlic festival, a pear festival, a peach festival, I could go on and on. What's unique about this is that it's the whole look at the food, yeah, system of California. And to do it on the grounds practically of the Capitol makes a big statement. And it's the comprehensiveness and the intentionality of what we bring together here.
Well, there's even an asparagus festival that's wildly popular. Yeah,
so,
we celebrate all foods.
So, Mark, I don't know if you counted them yet, but they say there may be as many as 80,000 people will visit this weekend.
We're about too shy, but I see two people coming in the gate, so we're going to get there. We're going to get there.
Who would have thought this could happen? This is an incredible thing, and I'm going to ask you about that. But one more follow-up on all the people doing the things that need to happen. And I'll start with Patrick, but I want to get you guys in on this, too. Patrick, there comes a point where somebody has to say, yeah, I'm in, and I'll call this person and that person and that person. I mean, how do you explain the people that just step up in the community? Because I had a feeling it didn't happen everywhere. I mean, you don't do it all yourselves individually. You must be able to make a few phone calls and have people say, okay, I'm in. I'm going to help.
Yeah, let's come and play. And for us from the chef's community, I think really what it is we all love being in Sacramento. We love the access here. Sometimes maybe we have a chip on our shoulder like we were number two. I don't think we have that anymore because screw the rest of the world. Yeah, exactly. This is where the food is. But I think because we came together and intentionally over the years, really with Bobbin and I talked a lot about how do we make our community stronger? And if we gather people around a table to make the community stronger, how do we gather the people that are working in our kitchens to make the community stronger? And then how do we connect kitchen to kitchen to make it stronger? And then how do we get to a place where the Secretary of Food and Agriculture or someone who found something called Roots of Change, that I can go to Michael and say, this is what I'd like to see. We'd like food to be more important, and I don't know how to do it. And Michael gets to come along and say, here you go. This is it. And sometimes he's great with advice, and sometimes he says, you already know how to do this. You don't need me.
Right.
Right? And I think that that's starting to spread.
Right. So, yeah, can I just add to this that one of the things that's really exciting that I've seen over the last few years is that there are people all over the state in communities that care about food. I mean, it's incredible. This year we worked with chefs from all over the state to help the small poultry producers in the state of California, and they rallied, they wrote letters to the legislature. It was fantastic. There are now 27 counties or cities in the state that have groups of people that are focused on food policy and trying to improve the policy in their communities to get more food, healthy food access, but also to work with the legislature up here and the governor to come up with really innovative, strong policy that will help their communities. So 10 years ago, that did not exist. The universities, UC Davis now has an organic major, didn't exist 10 years ago, didn't exist 5 years ago. And that's happening all over the country. 10 years ago, all the soil sciences were dying in the universities. Now they're expanding again because the next generation has realized how important food and agriculture are. So we're living in a renaissance time in terms of food and agriculture.
And Roger, I think it's really important. I think one of the things that happened over the decades is that we all grew up on a farm, and our parents said, go make a better life. This is hard work, and there's not a lot of profit in it. And so a lot of us left, and I was one that wanted to. And when I left, I literally had a hole in my heart. That's how I knew how valuable it was to me. But we got disconnected as a consumer from the land, as students, as the system. We just cared about efficiency and convenience. And now we're back to, in many ways, we're back again to what it was, but that there was this disconnect. And what it took was a farmer can't change policy by themselves. We have 40 million consumers in the state who are voters and eaters and neighbors, and we have 77,000 farms. We need partners. Nothing happens without partnership, collaboration, and community. And that's where you need those lighthouse people like the Patricks and Bobbins of the world that say, hey, we can do this from our end. And we certainly have the willing farmers who, you want to talk about chips on the shoulder? I could talk to you about chips on the shoulder. So it's how we bring everyone together around something so fundamentally essential to how we live and live better and live in a way that's good for the earth, good for the economy, good for every person that works in the system.
You know, it's just hard not to just jump in every once in a while and say amen, because I get that. I'm excited about that too. But one thing I want to point out, Karen, is that you're kind of in a role of needing to put a tent over all of agriculture, and it's not just small scale, local, organic, but there's big farmers of all sizes and shapes in California. How do you keep them in the tent too, that they're part of this?
One of the most important values we have as a society are choice, to be able to make a choice, to make some determination about what's right for me, what's right for my family's pocketbook or our palate or our value system. And trying to make it all either or does not work. It doesn't work for consumers, and it doesn't work for the person who's doing the farming. We also have in this state, we're blessed to have family operations who are in their sixth and seventh generation. And the good news is, in California agriculture, they've been successful enough that the next generation wants to come back to the operation, and you either have to grow by acres or by adding value and vertical integration to be able to support more and more family members. And the good news is, if you're in your seventh generation, you've been able to support two or three generations at the same time.
So we have a lot of family-held farming operations, but they're based on family values and making sure that we're leaving something better for the next generation and the one after that.
Well, Michael, you look at that waterfront, and I know you have been in issues before where it's just like, are you for the little guy? Are you for the organic guy? Are you for the, you know, this other kind of operation?
Yes.
You've been pulled into that before.
Yeah, I have. And we are. One of the things that I've always believed is on this question that you just asked Karen, what's really incredible is that this is a very big state, and a lot of the land of the state is owned by farmers. So they are critical to the future of the state because they manage that land, the resource base upon which all our food and water is dependent. So they have a huge role, and we have to ally with them and make it easy for them to do the things that are needed for the long-term future. And that's hard because they live in a marketplace that's demanding quick turnaround, they have to make money. There's tons of things they have to struggle with. And so they're not going to be able to do that unless the public helps them do it. That's my belief. So I never talk about whether that it's better to be big or small. What I say is that all scales are really important. And as in nature, diversity is important. So we need all the scales of the farms, because sometimes the largest farmers have the most assets to be able to do really, really innovative things. And sometimes really small farmers can experiment in a way a big farm can't. So we need it all.
And you need sustainable, too.
Sustainability. But I think I have to use climate change. This is a perfect shift to climate change. Because in this state, we were the first state to incorporate natural working lands as one of our strategies to hold down the increase in temperature and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Only in forests and on our land base can we sequester carbon to actually mitigate climate change. And so we're offering through the Climate Change Investment Fund incentive dollars to farmers for on-farm water use efficiency that uses less energy and reduces greenhouse gas emissions, dairy digesters to capture methane and turn it into renewable electricity, transportation fuels, renewable natural gas, alternative manure management practices to create amendments to put back into our soils, and healthy soils incentives to really manage that land to sequester carbon. And when 50% of the land base is in private land, holders, I mean, this is what Michael was talking about. This is all of us working together to create multiple public benefits from lands that's managed by a private landowner.
Can I just jump in here?
Mark.
There's a rare interaction that is possible because you're in the industry and you're around these subjects every single day. Could you just take a few seconds to address probably the biggest maybe misconception that the general public, we don't think about these issues every day, that they may have about agriculture, that you would want to convey to them to address the biggest misconceptions, because we may all learn something from that discussion,
sure,
too.
In my experience, the biggest perception that is very important for us to get connected about is that farmers don't care about the land, and they don't care about their employees, or they don't care what their neighbors think. Farmers care deeply, but they're busy farming every day, and they think nobody cares or understands them, so they don't do enough of that kind of these kinds of the conversations. And when people come out and see how much they love the land and how they work with their employees throughout the system, they're like, or that they're using computers, robotics, and sensor technology. They're like, golly gee whiz, I didn't know that's what agriculture was about.
And then, too, I think that sustainability, that when we talk about sustainability, that rather than just using organic or one specific technique, that for us, sustainability is about the farms, the families, and the workers. And can all three make it? Because if the family can't make it, then there's not going to be any farm, there's not going to be any jobs. Oops, sorry about the finger. But that's what you're saying to the land. And so it's that bigger picture, right? To say, how do we make California better as a whole for our children and grandchildren, right? That's really what's most important at the end of the day.
Can I add on something to that?
Sure.
That I think another misconception is people think that agriculture is like the past, or it's old-fashioned, but actually it's cutting-edge science now. I mean, you cannot expect to get through this century unless we use cutting-edge science in agriculture, because we have so many challenges around water and climate and population. All the things that we have ahead of us require that farmers be on the cutting edge. Uh, and And the exciting thing is there are a lot of young people now who didn't grow up on farms, who are interested in agriculture. And one of the things that they're interested in is applying science in exciting ways. So it is really, I mean, people do have to, I would hope that people in California, the citizens of California, who very few are actually involved in agriculture on a daily basis, would realize the linkage and the and their dependence on farmers, and also their ability to support the farmers' evolution to meet the challenges.
You know, I really appreciate, too, Patrick, adding that sustainability includes not only what we're doing with the land and the water, but that people can make a living and afford to eat.
Right.
And when you talk about, I think, perceptions, some people just feel it's just this rich people here that are able to go to farmers markets, for example. But there are programs that make food available. Could you, one of you, explain that a little bit, that there's programs that available in the farmers markets that help people be able to purchase with food stamps?
Well, being able to use their EBT cards to be able to make purchases of fresh produce at farmers markets, that's now in every farmers market that I know of. And just in this region, we have over 40 farmers markets, including one of the oldest and largest on Sunday mornings under the freeway. There you go, Dan Best, got you mentioned in that one. But also we have a great partnership between farmers and food banks, because at any time in a season, there's either not a market or Mother Nature was super bountiful, and so you don't want to just throw that stuff away. It's edible food to get it to food banks, which also brings up a food waste issue that we do need to talk about today.
Nutrition incentives.
Yeah. But it's like really thinking about all the ways we can make sure if we've got edible stuff that we can get it to people. Oh, goody.
Food waste, you say? Available now at a restaurant near you. Recipes from over 110 chefs around the country using parts of foods that usually would be traditionally thrown out. Because like Karen says, what we want to do is work towards lessening the 40% of food that's grown on farms that doesn't go into bellies.
I want to be sure that the people that are listening to the podcast that would know that they're not seeing the book that you're holding up right now called Waste Not, but I would imagine that you can get it on Amazon or wherever you get books. Is that
absolutely
right?
Available on Amazon.com, so it's called Waste Not, or at the James Beard Foundation. So this is a publication of 110 chefs who have been through the James Beard Boot Camp for Public Advocacy. A bunch of us threw in some recipes about how we were using the leftovers and the scraps.
Chefs
at the end of the day are always about how you get the most out of everything that you do. If we get a cow, we don't make money on the ribeye, we make money on the shanks or the bone or the moo, right? The more we get out, then the more we can provide lives for our families, but also our employees as well.
I think it's
really timely, and also for people at home, painless and fun, right? A fun way to look at food.
Do you have a quick, easy recipe, something that people throw away all the time that they can use, that people can learn about right now?
Sure. So asparagus season, right? When it's asparagus season and you have those bottoms, restaurants around Sacramento, people are hit with both the rubber bands that are on the bottom of the asparagus and then usually throughout the bottom. So what we do is we take them, we poach them in oil and just cook them until they're soft and mushy, throw them in a blender, blend it up and strain it, and then you have the oil that has this beautiful asparagus flavor. We'll use it to cook eggs in the morning. We'll use it to make aioli or mayonnaises as well. We'll use it anywhere you use eggs. It just adds this beautiful, vibrant asparagus flavor to everything you cook.
For the other
recipes, you can buy the book here.
That's the only free one.
I want to just get back to the whole idea of making food affordable to every fork in the state. There is a program that the Department of Food and Agriculture that Karen runs here. There's a department with an office within that department called the Farm to Fork Office. And a program that they run is called the Nutrition Incentive Program. California is one of the only states in the United States that provides, as a state, matching money to the federal program that allows a family that's on CalFresh food stamps to go to a farmer's market and now corner stores and use their CalFresh dollars to double their purchasing power for fruits and vegetables. And so that makes fresh food affordable. That's what it's all about. And California is on the leading edge in that area, and it's a really innovative program. And the legislature and the governor agreed to up that program to $10 million this year and then $5 million for the corner stores. And so we're modeling how that can go. And eventually we hope that it's a permanent part of our budget here in the state of California.
And you can see at the end of the week, the people at the market going and purchasing vegetables, and if you spend $5, you get $5. So $5, $10, or $20. And in every one of the 40 markets in Sacramento and Yolo counties, this is available. And changing the way the foods are. And then too, Karen, I think it brings the farmers out, right? Because the farmers don't always talk.
But they do at the market.
When you get people to say, what do I do with cauliflower? How do I use those little potatoes? What's that big hard squash? You know, nothing I could have done with it when I was 10, but throw it at my older brother and try and hurt him.
What I just want to mention one other program is called Senior Citizens Farmers Market Coupons, and we get, it's a small grant program, but we stepped up to run it, and it's a $25 worth of coupons that goes to seniors. It's available through their local area office on aging, and there's nothing that makes me happier, well, makes me happy and sad at the same time, than to stand behind an elderly person, because I'm one of those too, who's got their coupons and they're trying to decide how to use their coupons. And their first question is, can't we get that price down a little bit more so I can buy mine? It's like, no, the farmers aren't making any money, but I get what they're saying. But there's nothing better than to watch those being redeemed, and they're going to go home with a sack full of really good food.
Right. Well, and you know, it's exciting too. There's things that this starting all over the country. I remember Gus Schumacher, who passed away this last year, and he had so many ideas, and you end up having Kaiser and others that are saying, look, healthy food makes people healthier.
You see Davis.
And how exciting is that? And it's coming up in Massachusetts and New York and Illinois.
So it's everywhere.
All these places. And I look around here today, and if people can hear any of the background noise, really,
it's
a huge crowd
busy already.
And it goes for, seven or eight blocks, and we are packing in thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Now, one thing, though. When I last night I went to get some tape to put a sign up or something at the East Sacramento hardware store, and I was talking to somebody that I was buying the tape for and talking about Farm to Fork, and they said, "What's that?" And I'm sure there's a lot of people roaming through here today, going through the tents, and they kind of have a general sense of what's going on, but they think, "What's that?" And Patrick, you've been here since the birth of this whole event. How do you answer that question when you're catching somebody and you say, well, this is the Farm to Fork Festival, and they say, well, what is it? What's Farm to Fork? What do you tell them?
I tell them it's a celebration of Sacramento. It's a celebration of California and who we are. That maybe years ago, to Michael's point, we didn't think of agriculture as good, right? But it was who we were, whether we liked it or not. And over the last 20 years, what's happened is that we now think agriculture is now cool and good and brings out 80,000 people onto a mall on a Saturday afternoon in September. And while that's great for the festival and it's great for marketing to bring people in from out of town, for me, even better is that the Secretary of Agriculture of California has conversations about how to get this food into every belly, about how to educate people about where their food comes from, about how to train the farmers that are coming next, about how to take food that was wasted before and just went into a landfill and funnel it out so that it gets used in a productive manner. Yeah. Those are the conversations that I think are really valuable.
Yeah. Well, Karen, when he says this, what worries me is that there is a political system, and I hear there will be an election this fall. And if you have a boss other than all of us in California, it's Governor Jerry Brown. What assurances do we have, there is such a thing, that this momentum keeps on going, no matter who gets elected, that we keep this train running?
Because the momentum itself will carry it through. There are so many people invested in this. The same thing that I told all of my friends, I was asked to speak at a national conference the week after the national elections 2 years ago, and it was all about celebrating the work that had started at USDA on climate change, and people were completely depressed, assuming that work was just going to go away. And I stood up and challenged them to remember, why were we part of the Paris Accords to start with? That wasn't just government saying, oh, we're going to do this. It was business stepping up. It was environmental organizations stepping up. It was private citizens. It was nonprofits. There was so much momentum in that. It's already embedded in the business model of every company that sources nationally or internationally is thinking about the sustainability of the food system that they're sourcing or where their customers are going. Look at millennials. Go to college campuses and look at the food they're demanding, not just the what the food is, what it's being served on, and how it's being served, and that they're sorting for keeping stuff out of landfills. This is beyond us. It is going to happen, and we all get to go along for the ride in many ways.
We have a kid who worked for us, is now at Cal Poly as a sophomore, and he found out that he can use his meal card to just go and buy raw materials. And so he has bypassed the whole, because he didn't particularly care for the cafeteria food. So he and his roommates are going down and buying fresh vegetables and meat and coming. Well, one of their dads is a rancher, so the meat comes from dad. But they are just bypassing, because the millennials care about good food and good nutrition.
Yep. Right. So, Michael Dimmick,
yeah,
you've tried to keep their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
I mean, you've gotten, when we talk about politics, you get in front of the Council of Food for All of California.
Right.
You're bringing people that weren't engaging politically to start joining their voices.
Yes.
Many of us must be like kind of herding cats, because they're,
yes,
many of them are really new to this, yes, this exercise. Kind of explain, because you are keeping track of legislation and so forth, and
yes,
not everybody's going to agree with what you're advancing.
Right.
But it's all related to food and agriculture, right?
Right. We, every year, we work with now almost 70 organizations from across the state to produce a report called the Food and Agriculture Legislation Tracker. There's here on the stage, for those who are in the room or in the site here, you can have one from last year. It's coming out again January 15th at Mulvaney's. Actually, this year we're going to honor, make some very nice comments about our Secretary of Agriculture, who has spent the last 8 years innovating. And it is a group effort to track bills in the state of California that relate to the future of food and agriculture. We take positions on those bills. There's huge debate among us about what bills we want to support and not. And it's always a big, you know, hassle, fight, but it's good. It's good because it's deepening everyone's knowledge. It's exciting, and it gets people engaged, and they realize they can have an impact. Many bills, a huge amount of bills this year that we supported, got passed. So it's very exciting that the electorate, that is, and these are multi-generations. These are millennials to old folks like me, are all working together to get legislation passed that ensures the future of food and agriculture for the state.
And there are so many voices. I'm sure at our legislature, like I'm across the state, everybody's coming in there. And I know they're pulling their hair out. They're saying, hey, why don't you and all the farmers go in the other room and get your head together and come back with one voice. And it's not easy, but you're working at it. Let me kind of head towards a wrap up here.
Okay.
Let's start tying together what it is we're experiencing. And I think that, Michael, could you first, mm-hmm, explain what you would call the food movement? Because some people feel like, you know, we're just jumping into the stream. So how would you describe what might be a food movement?
I think it's a growing awareness of people of how important everything that has to do with agriculture, from the farm to the table, how important it is to be thoughtful about it, to be awake to its impact on everything else, and to make conscious choices as a consumer to ensure that we improve the system. It's really about a commitment to constantly improve the system. And the movement is people who are becoming aware of that and saying yes to it.
How do you do, Karen?
It'd be hard to add to that. For me, it's about connectivity. I go back to how, especially 10 years ago, there was such a disconnect of not being able to have this kind of conversation with farmers. And California is known for connectivity. So this is, for me, is about the connectivity of rural and urban farmers and consumers, chefs and all of us. I mean, this is what has been missing. And this is how we have a thriving community, is by being more connected.
Patrick, what do you think?
And it is the awareness that restaurants have of our part to play, with 10% or more of the workforce working in hospitality, creating, as we said, conversations across the table. I think as we begin to see the power that we have to create or steer some of those conversations, then those conversations become bigger, because at the end of the day, almost everybody eats in restaurants.
Right.
And so as we get behind something and start the conversation, it becomes a self-feeding. Then all of a sudden people are coming, the Secretary of Food and Agriculture for California knows my name.
Right? she does.
Can I just point out a couple quick things?
Rob, I was going to ask.
I feel like I'm in the news business, right? I'm a morning weather guy, so I'm talking all the time about rain and climate and news stories, and especially how they relate to water, agriculture, climate change. I'm all into that. But one of the things that I think that maybe maybe not known to a lot of people is that people think that a lot of legislation starts way far away from where they are. But over time, things change where you live. It wasn't too long ago, people could not have chickens in their backyard. They said, why can't we have that in Sacramento? You can. I've got three chickens.
I got two myself.
There we go.
They're registered.
We got the bans. We're good to go. And not too long ago, people that raised maybe too much produce at their house, they just wanted to sell it, you know, to sustain their own farm, not to make money, but just to do it themselves. Not too long ago, you couldn't do that. City of Sacramento said, over time, people saying, hey, I want to do that now. By people wanting something, going to these city council meetings, they said, I want my city to be more like this. And what people wanted to do, or maybe we're doing under the table, is bubbling up to the surface. And there's a whole number of other things, people making food at their house. Before, you couldn't do it on a certain scale. Now you can. So just so you know, it's not always far away where these things happen. Sometimes they happen with your neighborhood saying, I wish we really could do that. We should try and change it. And over time, it changes. It just depends on how you want it to be in your neighborhood.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, good point. I tell you, this has been an exciting conversation. And one thing I want to do is there anyone have a burning question in the audience that Rob could ask? There we go, back here.
All right, here we go. All right, here you go, sir.
Oh, yeah. For y'all, with the education system eliminating ag and industrial arts classes to have kids, would we be better off to have kids that don't write code but they can ride a deer?
So technical, career technical education, I know it's important for your sector. It's very important for us. And with the new local control formula funding, it's up to the local school boards to keep it there. And that's where, when you see FFA jackets here today, those blue and gold jackets, those students going to their school boards, they show them why it's important. It's not just technical career education, it's leadership development, 4-H, those kinds of programs. But one of the other things we did, and our mayor, when he was still in the Senate, was a real driver of this, were programs called Linked Learning and Career Pathways, which have made millions of dollars of grants available for academy approaches to agriculture or food preparation and hospitality. And these are exciting places where students love it because it's more interactive, it's experiential learning. So it is happening, and there has been a robust conversation the last 2 years for both high school and community colleges about the tremendous need for more, even more dollars being put into career technical education. So we all have to be advocates in front of our local school boards and also at the state legislature during the budget process, okay? Yeah. Great point. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Burning questions? Things you want to know? Things you want to know about?
Okay.
The discussion about water in California, some other things.
Water, there's an easy topic.
Yeah, we're going to blow out the rest of the afternoon and just do water.
Oh, we have no problems with water, do we?
Don't get me started. I'm happy to spend another 45 minutes talking with you.
We'll have to go outside and kind of finish that into the next panel. But again, I want to thank this panel. And I think that just in a quick wrap-up, if I'd like each one of you, if there's anything you want to add, and if you want to direct them to a website or something for more information, let's start with Patrick. I guess with Farm to Fork, they can go online and look for the Farm to Fork Festival or Farm to Fork.
FarmToFork.com to see what's going on and just support your local farmers. I guess what I would say is the easiest thing, the best thing for anybody out here to do to help farmers and people eating about food is to go to farmers markets and buy real food and learn how to cook it. And you can start by buying the Wasteland book here for a limited time.
Or you can go to restaurants that yours and others and ask where it was grown and know something about it, too.
Right.
Karen?
I think it's all been said. We have a lot of services, and we have a specialty crop block grant program that has funded a lot of programs like Center for Land-Based Learning and Edible School Gardens and California Thursdays. We just released the request for proposals and concept papers a week ago. So if there's any nonprofits or entities out there that have some programs that they really want to help accelerate, take a look at our grant programs, cdfa.ca.gov.
I'll just say that Whole Foods Market just selected my organization, Roots of Change, to be the recipient of its 5% day on October 18th. So,
statewide,
that's 88 stores in the state. So if you go to Whole Foods on October 18th and spend any money at all, it will help us to do good work with all kinds of communities here in in Sacramento.
Oh, I had a plug too then. I think everybody thinks I invited you to. And I just want to say that if you, we have people listening from really all over the world. We've got some listeners to our podcast. And so we're going to put this conversation and others on. So check us out at farmtotabletalk.com. And we're on iTunes and, you know, all the other places you get podcasts, farmtotabletalk.com. It's an exciting time to be here. I really want to thank my guests for being here in the middle of a fantastic festival. And we have thousands of people around us now celebrating Farm to Fork. Patrick Mulvaney, Karen Ross, and Michael Dimmick. And I'm Roger Wasson. Thanks for being with us for this podcast live at the Farm Food to Fork.
Thanks for inviting me.
And thank you guys. So get that podcast. I can't wait to hear it later on. And I don't know about you, but I'm hungry. So let's go eat. That's how we can support farmers in California.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.